my advice to anyone who wants to be part of research for their prof or their mentor would be to figure out what you're interested in. You should really know what makes you curious, what you want to learn more about, and what you wouldn't mind spending a lot of time reading about and working on.
Hi, I'm Madison.
I'm Olivia.
And I'm Varun.
And we're your hosts of Office Hours Season 2.
What's Office Hours, Madison?
Oh, good question, Olivia. Office Hours is a monthly podcast produced by us, your peer research coaches, and the Huron University Library, where research takes center stage. Each month, we interview a professor at Huron to hear more about what they are up to.
Oh, and don't forget, we also talk to undergraduate students each month about their own research project in our Student Spotlight episodes. Before we dive in, we want to acknowledge that we are bringing you this podcast on the land of the Deshkanzibing Anishinaabek, Chippewas of the Thames First Nation, Lunapewa, Munsee, Delaware Nation, and Onyotaka, Oneida Nation of the Thames. We encourage you to read our full land acknowledgement on the Office Hours website or the show notes to learn more about the lands that Huron occupies and get informed about Indigenous news and resources.
Hello and welcome to Office Hours. I'm Olivia, your host of today's episode, and joining me in studio is a very special guest, Ovi. Ovi is in her fourth year at Huron and is completing an honors specialization in political science as well as a major in GLE. Last semester, Ovi traveled to Rwanda with a group of students on Dr. Scorgi's experiential learning trip. On top of conducting her own research, she also worked as Dr. Scorgi's RA on the trip and continued this work after returning. Okay, thank you so much for joining me today, Ovi. Let's get into my first question. Can you share what the focus of your research was on the Rwanda trip and what projects you worked on?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. When I was initially hired as an RA for Dr. Scorgi, it was supposed to be for her project that she is working on, which I did continue to work on in the summer. But then we ended up taking a break from that and steering into the website, which was my first project with her as an RA. Well, the website was initially meant to be a descriptive understanding of what the course really offers, and for it to sort of be like a quick glance or like a quick look for students who are interested in going to the trip. But then because Dr. Scorgi gave me like sort of the freedom to do whatever I could with it, I think I ended up going a little overboard with it. I ended up making videos, and then I had a journal site for it, which all ended up in being like this cumulative understanding of what I thought Rwanda offered me personally, but also what it meant for all the students who have ever gone on this trip. I had testimonials from students who went on the trip before. I had journal submissions from the students who went this year. And I also had a bio about the instructors involved in this trip. So that was my first half of the RA work. And the second project steered on in the summer, where Dr. Scorgi's project focuses on memorialization in post-genocide countries and how it manifests itself into physical sites. And the main question is, who is left behind? So for this, me and my colleague are focusing on Rwanda and Bosnia. While Beth, my colleague, is focusing on Bosnia, I continued to work on Rwanda since I had a little experience with it. And till now, we've been working on it for about, say, 6 months, and I've learned so much about it.
I also know as a part of the experiential learning trip, you have to complete an essay component. Can you tell me a little bit about your research interests there and how you chose your specific topic?
Of course. When we went to Rwanda, it was just a whole new world for me. And coming from like a country that was previously colonized, I thought I saw many different ways of similarities between India and Rwanda. And I was just so intrigued by how that connection could look like. That is what I wanted to initially focus on. But my trip to the Kigali Genocide Memorial really changed my entire research focus. I remember just thinking about how collective grief and unity was like and how it manifested itself into today's actions after 30 years of the genocide. So I focused on Umuganda, what we learned, small acts of collective healing, like monthly cleanups that they have, or the slogan that says Umunya Rwanda, which means I am Rwandan, and just how unity was built by the state, but also how it looked like in real life. And I focused on the government policies and the interpretations of it through the people we met and what it meant like for the development of the country overall.
Can you tell me a little bit more about what it was like meeting all these people in person and talking with different NGOs and government officials in Rwanda?
Yeah. Before going on the trip, I think all of us did so many readings about it, and it almost felt like a different world altogether that we were studying as a case study. But then just the first night in Kigali, it still hadn't sunk in that I was in another continent altogether. And where, like, I remember waking up to so many birds chirping. Like, it was insane to a level where that's what woke me up instead of my alarm. And you would know this since you were also my roommate on the trip. And it did get annoying in the end, but I will go back to that any day if I could. But just putting those theories or contexts that we learned through the readings and conversations and seeing that in real life makes you believe that what you're studying is so much more than what you imagine for it to be. Applying context or like terms of political science in real life is something that I feel like everyone should try to do at least. And I had the privilege of doing that through this trip. And it just sort of made so much sense to me that all that I'm studying has applications of it in real life. Just small conversations that I had with kids or like the women in peace reconciliation villages, it just makes you feel like there's a whole world behind those words as well.
How much did you know about Rwanda while you were applying to the trip? And do you have any expectations going in?
Fun fact, my first ever Model UN that I attended in grade 10, I was representing Rwanda. And I was so insecure and shy that I did not utter a single word the entire 3-day conference. And I had all my research on what Rwanda was, and I knew about the genocide. But since the committee was an outer space, it's called COPUS, Committee on Outer Space Policies, or I'm forgetting the name now. But I was like, it's nothing to do with the genocide, so I can't use this anywhere. And I just ended up knowing the name from there, apart from my political science textbook at the time. And I never thought of it. Like, if you told Ovi that you'd be visiting Rwanda in the next 5 years, she would not take you seriously in a way that she'd be like, why Rwanda? Out of all the countries that are out there, it's so random for me to think. But you know what? About a week ago, before I started traveling, my parents were a bit concerned because of the political situation around Rwanda. And I did have to reassure them because I really wanted to go. I'd spent 3 months just learning about this. And it all felt like a different world, like I said before. And even though I thought I'd prepared myself enough to go there and be like, I know what this means, I know how that happened, I know who this person is, to actually go there, you realize that having that context helps, but you're going there not to just apply these in your head, you're also going there to learn a bunch of new things. Like the way our trip helped me understand their culture, the way the people spoke to us, these things could not be taught to me by readings or talking to students who probably went before on the trip. And I think you just end up thinking, at such a young age, if you go to such an experiential learning trip, it makes you realize that there's so much to learn from, and there's so many things that everyone can just do if they have the opportunities to do so. And I was glad I had this opportunity.
I know you briefly touched on this earlier, but can you tell me a little bit more about the research you've done with Dr. Scorgi following the trip?
Of course. So Beth and I were hired in, I think, June for this project. And Dr. Scargi is amazing. She's someone I really look up to. And most of her research is comparative in nature. And for this study, she is focusing on Bosnia, Rwanda, and maybe Cambodia. I'm not too sure about that yet. But how memorialization looks like and how it is really steered towards who was left behind in physical sites. So, for instance, we did visit memorials, but we did end up seeing a couple of groups being left out from the narrative that the government had focused on. What influenced this narrative? Who was really behind it? Are people talking about this narrative about the groups that are left behind? And where do these groups stand when it comes to the context of post-genocide memorialization in general?
Did your visits to the memorial sites in Rwanda influence how you approach this research at all?
Oh, 100%. I think reading about memorial sites and visiting them, it's just two completely different things. When you're actually there, there's this, I don't know how to explain it, but it's this like a feeling where you're just almost surrounded by the whole world that was happening at that time around you, and you don't know how to sink that in. And when you have that feeling within yourself and you're trying to immerse yourself in that experience, it gets too overwhelming. And it did get overwhelming for me in the Murambi Genocide Memorial. I think with the hard facts that we were presented with, when I saw the skeletons of kids and women and men and the whole story behind it, I think it just puts you a lot into perspective. And at that time, I personally couldn't think about anything else but how, like how does one do this? How does, what level of propaganda is necessary for you to influence someone to take an innocent's life like this? And what level of persuasion or the acts would have really influenced these people to commit such horrendous acts? But then from a poli-sci perspective, I tend to think about, well, what propaganda was this? These people would have been masterminds in conducting this operation in a sense, because they knew exactly what they were doing. They knew exactly who to target. They knew exactly how to go about this. Experiencing all of this, coming back to your college life and trying to read text about the same thing again, it feels like you know a bit about what happened and now you're trying to deepen your focus. So it definitely helped a lot with not having to sort of refer to other articles, trying to know what that term meant or what the sentiment might have been around the whole situation.
It's definitely a very heavy topic to study. Would you have any advice for students looking to research similar topics and how to cope with the information they're learning?
I agree. It is very overwhelming. And I don't want to be cliche and say take a break, but that is genuinely what I do. It does get too much. It's almost like you're wrapped around with such information. It becomes like an everyday conversation you have with yourself. And it does get overwhelming where your sensitivity towards other topics. I found myself having that where my empathy sort of was just, my empathy tank was full is what they told us in the wellness services workshop before we left for the trip. And I keep thinking about that because sometimes when I'm reading like statistics, especially about the number of women who were assaulted or the kids or how it's impacted the coming generation, and most of it is negative sometimes what I read. And having to grasp that in does get a little overwhelming personally. But taking a break, spending time with my friends, thinking about my dogs, listening to music, it always helps. Taking space out from whatever you're doing. It also prevents like a tunnel vision that I tend to like build. Because if I'm focusing on something, I tend to just view from that particular like vision. I don't consider other things. So, for example, if I'm taking a break, I'd be like, oh, wait, what about that focus? How would someone else approach this? And then it also like gives you perspective in a way if you're taking a break and you're not always focusing about your research.
What advice would you give to a student who wants to get involved in research, specifically through experiential learning courses?
Even if you feel like there are some reasons you can't go for it, if you reach out to people you think might help, like your professors or even the financial aid office or past students who've been on the trip, do that. I feel like you really need to be a little proactive when it comes to such trips because they are self-paced in a way where you do take charge of your understanding of the entire content. And if you're really interested, keep close contact with your professor at all times when it comes to this.
Along the same line, would you have any advice for a student who's looking to get involved in research with a professor?
Oh, yes. I don't know if this is good advice, but in second year, when I really wanted to get involved in research, I ended up emailing all my professors with my resume, being like, I have taken this course with you. This is how I did in the course. I love what you do, and please hire me, or like, I can volunteer to help out with your projects. And to one professor, I think it was borderline harassment from my behalf. But I did email him so many times to a level where he finally caved in, I think. And he was Dr. Thomas Tieku over at King's. And he has an informal international relations lab. And I was so impressed with the work he does surrounding African politics that I really, really wanted to be part of it. And he was like, I don't hire second years, so you can volunteer if you want. I was like, I'll just sit in your meetings and I will learn. That's all I want. I don't want to get paid. I don't care about any of that. I want to know how this could look like if I want to pursue this as a career. And just to have to shadow an RA for a day really changed my perspective in second year, like looking back. And my advice to anyone who wants to be part of research for their prof or their mentor would be to A, figure out what you're interested in. You should really know what makes you curious, what you want to learn more about, and what you wouldn't mind spending a lot of time reading about and working on. B, research the same focus into the professors that you have. C, my third advice, reach out to the professor that you think would align with your research interests. I think at Huron, the community is just so approachable, especially the Huron professors, and they're just so kind to students, and they always love chatting with any research focus that you've had. Like, I have great mentors like Dr. Sergi and also Dr. Kram from the GLE department, Dr. Helmer as well. And these are three professors I really look up to who have really helped me understand what research in my particular fields could look like. And yeah, attend office hours. I think it might seem very intimidating initially because it does feel like, I mean, I personally didn't have any idea what to ask in office hours, but it always helps if you just go introduce yourself to the professor because then they know who you are and then it kind of builds a personal bond with them, which might not make the class seem difficult or intimidating in general. And then you can probably further on research or get advice on how to get into research from them.
So why do you think it's important for students to get involved in undergrad research or experiential learning while still completing their degree?
I always found my friends who were in like a science background having the ability to apply what they were studying in a classroom much easier than I found it to be. And by the time I was in my third year, it did feel repetitive in a sense where I was just studying theory and it didn't feel like I could apply any of the concepts that I'd learned or like I could really gauge of what I was learning and its capacity in real life. And I did kind of crave that, which is what motivated me to apply for the experiential learning trip altogether as well. I think it's very necessary to really put yourself out there if you find yourself being curious about things you don't know about. When it comes to liberal arts, I think having to apply that curiosity in ways like research and such trips is just another way of not just building your personal sort of focus, but also understanding what a career in this could also look like. Like, if tomorrow I want to be a research fellow in this particular field, what institutions could I probably approach? What life would that look like? If I want to be a professor at the end of the day, what would maybe grading look like? Reach out to your professors for these kind of things. I think even just having a conversation with them gives you so much perspective into what possible careers outside of what is already out there could look like. And that would be my advice, I think.
That's really good advice. Thank you. So what's your best tip for managing time when you're balancing classes, RA responsibilities, big research projects, or even just everyday life?
Time management has always been sort of tricky for me since first year because I do tend to take on too many responsibilities at once. But I think just planning your day out one day at a time, it really helps. Knowing what you have coming up again, like in the coming week, also helps me personally. I think I love having my week planned out, my day planned out, and just structuring what each hour of my day would look like, because that clears any anxiety I would have about not having anything to do or having too much to do on my plate. And it is difficult. It is overwhelming. It's too much. It's chaotic as a student in university. But then I think that's what makes it so nice. I love it. I think I would go cuckoo if I did not have anything to do. So I'm glad I get to work and study and do so much at the same time.
Okay, thank you so much for joining me today, Ovi. I have a few rapid fire style questions to ask you. The first one is, what's your favorite movie?
The Namesake by Meera Nair.
Okay, do you have any pets?
I do. I have two dogs. Their names are Polka and Zoe. They're back home in India. Polka's 13, she's a Dalmatian, and Zoe is 3, she's a Cocker Spaniel.
Oh. Do you have a top artist at the moment or a band?
It's called When Chime at Toast, and they're an indie band from India.
Are you currently binge-watching any TV shows?
Mindhunter on Netflix.
And do you have a favorite color?
Pink.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me. It was definitely very insightful to hear about your research projects and what you thought about the Rwanda trip.
Thank you so much for having me. It was truly so nice to catch up with you and having to share my two cents on whatever I feel like I could. I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Office Hours. We'll see you next time.
I don't think I've talked so much in my entire life.